Anybody tell you that I miss practice?
I made my mistakes.
If a coach say I miss practice,
whatever it is, it's not right on the teleprompter.
And y'all hear it, then that's that.
Don't you feel like that creates tension between East and West?
Yeah, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
There's no words there.
Well, I'm not a crook.
What does that mean, to play us out?
I mean, I might have missed one practice this year.
What is... I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean?
Not a game. Not a game. Not a game. We talking about...
Hey everybody, this
practice.
Is Same Old Clippers. I'm Robert Palm. I'm here with Lewis Keene, as always. Lewis, how are you doing?
Dude, I'm doing real, real good. It's the same old Clippers, man. Back-to-back losses on back-to-back nights. I feel like I'm back at home. I'm comfortable. This is an environment I feel safe in.
Yeah, I mean, there are calls to fire Doc Rivers. You know, I've been seeing Lou Williams trade demands. This is very familiar to me. We've been seeing this for however long we've been Clippers fans. You know, this is just what happens, is the Clippers lose games that they shouldn't, and lose games that they should, I guess. Last night was a pretty tough loss. And bad stuff happens to them, like Landry Shamet getting injured, and Pat Beverly maybe being injured, though it seems like it's a load management game. I don't know. Lots has happened to the Clippers since the last time we talked, but they do have two losses, which means double the content here tonight. What did you think about the – I guess we can start with the loss today to the lowly Pelicans. Everybody's really upset about this. I'm less up in arms, and it's not a great loss, but it's their third game in four nights. Pelicans play fast. Jrue Holiday is really good. I can't get too upset about it at this point in the season.
One thing I'll tell you, Rob, is this loss would not have happened under Mike Dunleavy.
What about Vinny Del Negro?
It's hard for me to get too worked up about it, although when I look at our record and I see 7-5, those are just numbers you don't like seeing next to each other. And I'm starting to wonder, oh, if we're 8-8, you know, is that going to be, you know, LeBron, Big Three era?
Mm.
You know? Revisited, but no, I mean, they obviously looked like crap tonight, coming out in the first half looking very hungover, or just tired. Okay, they played Houston last night. Houston wears you out.
Yep.
And you know, New Orleans maybe not so much, but New Orleans at least, you know, they showed a big Clipper issue this year, where they have one specific matchup problem, and they were confronted with that pretty loudly tonight, which is they don't really have anyone to body up against skilled, physical, tall basketball players. Tonight it was Derek Favors,
yep.
And granted, part of that was coming, you know, in the second half of a back-to-back, but Derek Favors is, you know, half the player and twice the man Joel Embiid is. But, you know, but what he had, 20-20 today, he was great.
Derek Favors is really good, like, really good. I don't know if he's, like, one of the more underrated players in the NBA, but, yeah, I mean, he's really good. People were calling for Zubats to play more over Trez, which I can see. And I think Trez played 36 minutes, which is just too much for him, especially on a night when Favors, who's big and skilled, like you mentioned, is in there getting rebounds, kind of just shooting over him. But on the other hand, like, I do understand. I mean, Trez has been really effective to start the year. He has a great synergy with Lou, and he has the respect of, like, the teammates. And not saying Zoo doesn't, but, I mean, Trez is on a different level, and Doc, like, benching him in the fourth quarter, like, I just don't know if that's really going to happen unless Zoo is having an out-of-this-world game. That said, I mean, 12 minutes is too little for him. Like, he needs to play more, especially against a big guy like Derek Favors. But, yeah, I mean, Favors is a problem. I mean, the first time they play Embiid is going to destroy them. Giannis, honestly, even though he's more of a wing, similar type of just physical presence that they cannot deal with. And, I mean, Giannis destroyed them. It's going to be an issue for them this season. It's why, like, and early pundits were putting the Clippers in the finals, which is, you know, a little premature maybe, but if they play the Bucks or Sixers, I think they're going to have real problems, you know, even with guys like Kawhi and PG who are great defenders. I don't think either of them was really a good matchup for Giannis. And I mean, neither of them has played Giannis this year, but and certainly I don't think the Clippers have anybody who can guard Joel Embiid. So it is a weakness. I mean, Jrue Holiday was great, and without Pat Beverly, the Clippers didn't really have anybody who could guard him. I thought Rodney Magruder and Mo Harkless did decent jobs, and Holiday's just really good. But, yeah, I mean, 7-5 doesn't look great, but, like, Kawhi sat, what, this is his third or fourth load management game?
Yeah.
Third, I think, and they're 0-3. So they're still 7-2 when he plays. And, like, you know, he's the best player on this team. And if he doesn't play, like, even with Paul George, like, they're not going to win all those games. So the defense is an issue. But, I mean, anytime you play Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell big minutes, you're not going to have a great defensive effort. Like, those guys are awesome. Like, I love those guys. Like, just, like, anybody talking about trading Lou is just, like, stop. But, I mean, you can't expect to play in 37 minutes and hold teams to, like, under 100 points. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said, but I think there's also, not that there's a lot of centers like this in the NBA, but Clint Capela also beat the Clippers mm-hmm. up a bunch, and I was thinking more about the Houston game just in the sense of if the Clippers end up playing that team in a series, one of the things that the Rockets do really well is they're able to control the pace in a way that sort of determines how the game is going to be played. Like, even if you're playing the Rockets really well, they're still going to be doing slow isolation plays with Harden at the top of the key and then Westbrook at the top of the key and just getting their, you know, 1.2 points per possession or whatever mm-hmm. that they get, you know, with some amount of variance based on the three-point shot, but basically, you know, running their game. And I think if the Clippers do end up playing that team in a series, like, that's not a sweep for them because that team plays very well at home. They have a guy that the Clippers didn't have an answer for, even with Kawhi on the floor and Pat Beverly. I don't know. It's sort of hard to take the Rockets seriously because they have Russell Westbrook on that team, and teams with Russell Westbrook, like, often struggle with implosion. To a certain extent, and people are going to get mad at me for saying this, but also James Harden teams. But they looked pretty good last night, even playing shorthanded. And they beat a very good Clipper team. So I think, I don't know, there's stuff to take away from both of these losses.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers definitely have weaknesses. I mean, I know I was fully on the signed Joakim Noah train before the season. I mean, it turns out he's injured, apparently, and, like, apparently pretty badly. I don't know if it's actually been said what his injury is.
But,
I mean, that explains that. I was pretty certain the Clippers would try to sign him. And, you know, it's for matchups like this. Like, I'm not saying a 32-year-old Joakim Noah is really the answer, but, I mean, he would help against some of these guys. And, yeah, I mean, it's a weakness the Clippers have. I think Zoo has improved this year as a defender, but he's still just not a physical match for those types of players. I mean, Capella's way more athletic than he is, has way more bounce, just, and is way quicker, just laterally, vertically, just everywhere. He's just faster on the court. And Embiid is just, I mean, nobody in the NBA can really guard Joel Embiid right now, but, I mean, certainly nobody on the Clippers can. And it's going to be an issue. I mean, I think Harden is a guy who not many teams have answers for. Pat Beverly has defended him really well in the past. The problem with Pat is he commits a lot of stupid fouls because he gets so hyped up and plays over aggressively. And the one guy in the NBA you cannot afford to foul and commit any stupid fouls against is Harden. So Beverly might be able to guard him well, but he's going to rack up fouls, which means you can't play, and Harden's getting to the line, which is bad news. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think the Rockets would be a really tough playoff matchup. I mean, I don't know how they'd really defend Kawhi and PG over a seven-game series. I mean, PJ Tucker can only really guard one of them. And they do have Thabo Sefolosha, I guess, but, I mean, you know, I don't, that would be a really tough series. I couldn't even say that straight face. I love Thabo Sefolosha, but he's like, what, like 36 now? Like, I mean.
We will not be disrespecting Thabo Sefolosha on tonight's same old Clippers. However,
he's good.
However, we will be disrespecting JJ Redick.
Man's.
Good.
With his shooting sleeve. Well, I was watching this with some of my friends, and one of them was just like, what is that on JJ Redick's arm? And I'm like, yep. that is what he has, and he got that after leaving the Clippers, probably just searching for something in his life to replace what he's lost. And I don't, he looks bad, like he looks old.
He needs the sleeve to cover the Silver Sun pickups lyric he has on his arm. he made the playoffs the first 13 years of his career. This is going to be the first year he misses. Unless they trade him.
Yep. I think they do trade him too. Because, I mean, even though they beat the Clippers today, like, they're mired by injuries right now. And, like, they're already, what, like, 3-8? Like, in the Western Conference, that's tough to come back from. Like, I think they trade Redick at some point. Probably to a playoff team to keep that hope alive. There are a bunch of teams. Like, I think Dallas could probably use him to some extent. San Antonio, Pop would find a way to be able to utilize his shooting without, you know, exposing his weaknesses. But, I mean, he was bad defensively today. I mean, he's been bad defensively for years. But he's a guy who, when he was on the Clippers, is like, wow, like, watch him shoot threes and then miss all the important ones. And now it's just like, I don't have to worry about JJ collapsing in big games and in big moments, and it feels great.
And being completely shut out of the series, out of a playoff series. Hey, he talked a lot of trash about the Clippers when he left, and I actually checked out tonight when the game ended to see if he and Doc Rivers would exchange pleasantries, and they didn't. And I'm not going to make too much of that, but he talked a lot of trash about how he had lost all of his joy playing for the Clippers and, you know, how the locker room was such a drag and, like, you couldn't really put a finger on it. It's like, dude, you were, like, you were one of the leaders of that team. So, like, don't talk to me about how, like, oh, the Clipper franchise is, like, oh, this dark place or whatever. It's like, you make your own workplace, so. So no love lost there.
He had a podcast. I think he had one with Chris Paul and then one where he was on like Zach Lowe's, yeah. I think maybe where he was talking about like how, like, you don't know what you have until it's gone regarding the Clippers. I mean, I think a lot of them feel that way. Like they were all like super upset about it. Like that team was not getting over the hump. And then once they were gone, they like almost all of them went to worse situations. Like DJ is bad now. Like
he's terrible.
He's really bad. And he's playing on a Nets team that is not looking great. Blake is on a mediocre as shit Pistons team, like in Detroit. And I live in Michigan.
Mediocre as shit.
I was going mediocre as shit, but
got it.
You can take it or leave it on any given night. And like I live in Michigan, but like he went from LA to Michigan. Which, I mean, for me, you know, I'm out here for a job for, like, a guy who's, like, wants to get into, like, the film industry and, like, is, like, a megastar, like, not the greatest of looks. And then Chris Paul is looking washed in Oklahoma City. So, you know, yeah. Lob City, Jamal is out of the NBA. Like, Lob City, it has not ended very well. And, like, all those guys are past their primes now. Like, maybe none of them will ever get a ring. That's pretty crazy. I mean, Blake and DJ will be around for a while longer, probably, but it's, no love lost for JJ.
Do you think the Nets are going to get one?
I don't know. I mean,
it's obviously very unlikely that they do. The question is, do they have a chance? And that basically depends on how good KD is.
Yep.
When he comes back. But yeah, that's, I never thought of that before. It's like none of those guys ever getting a ring.
It'd be crazy. I think Chris Paul will have like a Gary Payton one, where like in his very last season, he'll get on some team, the equivalent of like the 2008 Celtics. Like,
yeah, I mean, the question is, will LeBron still be good enough in 2 years
to bring him on?
Chris Paul buyout to like end up working with the Lakers.
LeBron's looking old. I mean, he's still been really good, but I mean, he's noticeably losing steps. Like,
yeah, he can't beat guys off the dribble like no, anymore. Did you see, were you watching against the Phoenix Suns?
I saw a fair amount of that. He was taking so many threes.
He couldn't get by people, and he forced a bunch of really bad shots. And that'll come and go.
Yeah.
But it'll come more. I mean,
every year.
Six, yeah, than it did in last year or the year before that.
Yeah.
I'm still not, like, worried, I guess, like, about LeBron. I think he'll be fine, but these games where he has, like, 14 points and shoots, like, you know, 5 of 16 from the field, like, that will happen more.
Yeah, that used to never happen, ever. like, 4 years ago. But, the Lakers are really good. I mean, props to Frank Vogel. I think he's done a good job coaching them up. Danny Green has been incredible. Dwight Howard, we gave props to him. Still playing real well. AD's been, the Lakers have been really good. I'd say the Bucks have probably been the best team in the NBA so far, but Lakers might be second. I think Giannis is the best player in the NBA. I've said it on the pod before, but the Bucks just look really good, even without Middleton now. Disrespect to JJ Redick.
Who hasn't looked good, but who's about to look way better, is the Portland Trailblazers.
Oh, yeah.
Because today I got a text. I got a text that Carmelo Anthony has signed with the Portland Trailblazers. He's back, people.
I'm so happy. Like, people said this about, like, Kobe, which was not true. Like, the NBA is better with Kobe in it. Fuck that. No. But the NBA is better with Carmelo Anthony in it because Melo is awesome. And he's especially awesome on the Blazers because he's not what they need whatsoever, but it's going to be so entertaining. Like, the first time they roll out a lineup with him and Hassan Whiteside together.
Oh, my God. Do you have any games against them soon?
I think. But, they do need power forwards, which is where Melo plays now. So, like, I guess from, like, a sheer positional perspective, he makes sense. But, like, they don't need outside. They don't need, like, creation offense. They need defense and, like, rebounding.
December 3rd is the next game.
He might still be on the team then. I'm excited.
Do you think he's still, yeah.
I don't think he's on there to end the season, but like December 3rd, that's like 3 weeks away. I think he can make it till then.
What about All-Star break? I think he makes it to All-Star break. This team is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I've said this on a different podcast before, but Melo is kind of like the bottom out guy.
I love that. It's one of my favorite theories.
Where once you, like, you get Melo when your team's in bad shape and needs to be, like, in the absolute worst shape so that it can, like, repent and do better. You can, like, jettison. Like, you get Melo to – it's like when you get – it's like when you get chicken pox. Like, one kid gets chicken pox, and you just bring everybody over to get chicken pox. And then once everybody has it, then nobody can get it anymore. You get rid of it and it feels better.
He's like the goat in Yom Kippur, the Azazel, where you load all the sins onto them and then send it off into the desert.
That's an even better analogy. Yeah. I mean, and will that work for the Trailblazers remains to be seen. But it's worked for the Rockets before. It's worked. Didn't really work for the Knicks, gotta say. But
the Knicks are also unique in their awfulness, though. Like, they're just a trash fire of an organization. But yeah, I mean, it'll be super entertaining. Like, the Blazers are not very good. Melo is not going to make them any better. He might make them worse, but he's going to make them so much more fun. Like, I cannot wait to watch the first time Dame is open somewhere and Melo has the ball in 18 feet, ignores him to jib jab a little bit, a pull up shot, and just Portland fans will freak out on Twitter. They already hate Hassan Whiteside. They are going to hate Melo. I'm so excited for this.
Blazers fans like Hassan Whiteside.
No, the Blazers fans I know hate Hassan Whiteside.
And I know Corbin Smith hates him.
But most other Blazers people I know do not like him.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been pretty bad for them so far. Unsurprising.
The Blazers thought that Hassan Whiteside was their bottom out guy. But the problem was they didn't need to bottom out when they got Hassan Whiteside. He just sent them on the path needing to get Melo.
What if they do collect all the bottom out guys? Like, they bring in Jamal Crawford next.
And Raymond Felton. They got to get everybody. They have to fully redeem their franchise's, like, cloudiness by just bringing everyone that has bad vibes in Portland. Jamal, Raymond Felton. You know,
who else was on that team that year?
They were probably mad they didn't get Dwight. Imagine if this Blazer team had Dwight instead of
Hassan
Whiteside, how much better they'd be.
A lot, which is startling to think in the year almost 2020. Yeah, they need to reunite that. What year was that? The 2013 Blazers? Raymond Felton, Jamal Crawford, what, like, get Joel Freeland back from England?
Andre Miller.
Andre Miller, like, not even able to jump 3 inches off the ground anymore.
never could get the 6-inch high jump for Andre Miller.
Oh my god.
He did have that one nice dunk though.
Yeah, that one tip dunk, legendary. He comes out of nowhere.
He had a fast break tomahawk.
Really? I haven't seen that. Was that from college?
No, it was like in year 15 playing for the Blazers. He just threw down a tomahawk, like, completely out of nowhere. It's just like one of those cracks in the time dimension or something. Some alternate universe where Andre Miller had, like, Anthony Simons hops.
Speaking of alternate universes, you know who was an alternate universe recently? Dion Waiters, when he took...
This is how we do segues on Same Old Clippers.
Dion Waiters took an edible, I guess, that was not his own, that somebody gave him. And I guess his reporting is still questionable at this. Like, he had, like, some people said he had, like, a seizure. Other people said he had a panic attack. Dion said it wasn't his edible. It's just a fascinating story. Like, I need, like, a full scale, like, 3,000-word article doing, like, a neo-noir type breakdown of this situation, like, lay out the investigator, like, the victim, all the suspects. My prime suspect is Tyler Hero. I think it was a bad case of rookie hazing. Dion was salty that Hero took his spot and was bullying the shit out of him. And Hero was like, hey, man, like, you know, it's been tough, but, like, here, take this edible, spiked it with something. And that's how we get there.
I'll do you one better because I think you're onto something. What if it was a situation where Dion Waiters always confiscated the rookies' candy and made them bring candy on the flight, and then he would just take his pick? And then Tyler Hero knew that Dion had a proclivity for the gummies, and so he just slipped him a couple bad ones. Or he brought a few spiked ones on the plane, knowing that they would be confiscated by Dion Waiters. You know, this kind of stuff happens all the time, Rob.
I like this because it also explains why Dion Waiters is always looking chubby. It's because he keeps taking all the rookies' candy on planes.
There you go. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's it's the kind of magic that really only happens in November, you know, of an NBA season. And some people I know have been struggling with the NBA this year. You know, the coaches' challenges.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of injuries now. But, you know, this off-court drama, it does help to distract from, you know, an on-court product that has its ups and downs.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's always something interesting going on, like, you know, the Dion Waiters thing, the suspensions we've discussed previously, you know, the random trashed.
Carl Towns getting in a bunch of fights, just fighting everyone, just going to the grocery store, getting in fights.
Desperate to prove Jimmy Butler wrong by displaying his toughness and just getting in fights. I'll show you, Jimmy, like, I'm tough. I don't just play video games. I get in fights. You know, there's been lots of fun stuff, you know. Russell Westbrook apparently trash talked Pat Beverly yesterday after the Rockets game.
Last night, he said, Pat Bev trick y'all. He's not actually a good defense. He just like makes a lot of noise and like fouls people. And then he like reminded everyone that Harden went for 47, which like, okay. But also like Russell Westbrook went for like 8. So.
Yeah. I mean,
I do think Pat Beverly's a little bit overrated as a defender, but I'm also absolutely. Not sure. Like, I'm also not sure like how good of a defender people think Pat Beverly is. Like, he hasn't been first team all defense like in a few years. So it's not like he's getting major defensive awards, and he doesn't have the reputation as a stopper that Tony Allen did. You know, it's not like people are hyping him as the best wing defender in the NBA or something like that.
Yeah.
But I do think there's value to his like competitiveness and to his, and even to his fouling. I think there is some value. I remember the beginning of last year, he was like hand checking guys twice every first quarter. And then it would just be like, all right, we're in the bonus, like stop hand checking people. But I do think there's value, especially as the season goes on and referees swallow their whistle a little bit more. Mm-hmm. They're playing physically and it's like rattling guys, especially in Staples Center where you have to like convince fans to stand up and cheer sometimes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think actually, I mean, his just attitude and like communication is a big asset. I think as a one-on-one defender, I certainly think he's overrated. I don't think he's ever been, you know, at that Tony Allen level, or for a couple of years, Tony Allen was just like invincible on defense.
Yeah.
And he was really good for a couple of years, but I mean, he certainly as a Clipper, I don't think he's ever been, I mean, he did have that bad injury his first year with the Clippers. And he's, you know, he's past 30 now, but yeah, I mean, I don't think he's ever been like a true stopper like that, but it's like his energy, his toughness, you know, his willingness to give hard fouls, his ability to communicate on the court and like yell at people, and, you know, just communication is like probably the most important part of defense in terms of not just like individual stopping, but like actually creating a cohesive unit, which is what actually leads to good defense. It's not just individual stopping, and which is why the Avery Bradleys of the world, I just called him Avery Bradley, are so overrated, is because like, yeah, like he's really intense one-on-one and like he is like really hard to shake. He's super intense, but like he doesn't do any of the other things that make like for a good defense. And Pat Beverly does do those things, but yeah, I mean, I actually think, I mean, he's shooting, he's ice cold right now, but I think his offense is underrated and his defense is overrated because he doesn't turn the ball over ever. And he's a good 3-point shooter. Like, there's value to that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And he's a great rebounder, too.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Like, in a ridiculous rebounder. For a short guy who doesn't have hops, like, he's just smart and, like, just outworks everybody. Yeah. But, yeah.
What did you think of Paul George's first start?
I mean, he was incredible. I mean, there are things he didn't do great. Like, Jrue Holiday destroyed him down the stretch. Just took the ball out of his hands, like, three or four times. But, I mean, on offense, he looked really smooth. Like, he was running pick and roll. He was hitting spot-up threes. He looked very unafraid of drawing fouls and taking contact on injured shoulders, which is a big deal. Defensively, I thought he played – I mean, he wasn't, like, dominating the game, but, I mean, I thought he looked pretty good defensively. He made a couple nice passes. He's certainly not, like, a great passer, but, I mean, he was looking to pass. Like, he was making reads out of double teams. I mean, I think the Clippers can't possibly have asked for any better from him personally. I mean, in terms of just down the stretch, like, not getting stripped, sure, but as an overall performance, I mean, I thought he was really, really effective.
Yeah, we're probably not going to see that Paul George on every night.
Yeah.
But just the huge upgrade from, like, having Landry Shamet chasing down passes and, you know, defending guys is huge. Like, I was kind of jokingly do it as I was watching games last week, but when especially because Shamet wasn't shooting the ball well and wasn't defending all that well, it's like, man, wait till we have Paul George in that position, because, like, Landry Shamet competes really hard on defense, but he just doesn't have the length to really accomplish anything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of frustrating. It's like, oh, he's like blanketing this guy, but the guy is also getting any shot he wants. Like, who is it against Portland and against Toronto, where, like, Fred VanVleet was just working him. Fred VanVleet's not a big guy, and, like, Landry Shamet should be able to, like, crowd him, but he just doesn't have the length to actually, like, block any shots or get in the way.
Yeah. I mean, Paul George is going to be huge. I mean, he won't always be as good as he was tonight, obviously, especially offensively. But, I mean, his size and, like, defensively will be big. And, I mean, I don't really, like, I think the Clippers might load manage him to some extent, but, like, I don't think he's going to be put on, like, a back-to-back load management plan like Kawhi, because he doesn't have that type of degenerative injury. Like, he had shoulder surgery, but he has no long-lasting shoulder problems, and he has no other, like, I mean, he might get games off here or there, have a minutes limit for right now, but I see no reason why he shouldn't play most of the rest of the season. So, I mean, I think as he continues to work his way back and get chemistry with everybody, I mean, he's really good. He was, like, a top five MVP guy last year. He fell off down the stretch because of his injuries, but, I mean, he's really, really good. And, I mean, I thought he fit in as well as possible tonight.
Yeah, and I think one other thing is this team is – the one thing that this game previewed is how unstoppable they're going to be down the stretch of games, especially coming out of timeouts. When you have, you know, that play, that set piece for Paul George hitting the three.
Oh, yeah.
In the last minute, it just made it look really easy. It's like – teams are going to have to decide what they're going to do, and it's probably going to end up with Kawhi and Paul George both having kind of one-on-one matchups instead of guys being able to, like, force the ball out of their hands and into, let's say, Lou Williams' hands. Like, it's going to be one of those two guys, and they're going to be able to get really good looks.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think when you have Lou, Kawhi, PG, any two other players, they'll be able to do whatever. And, like, Doc will have a lot of options. I think there are some valid criticisms about his rotations thus far this season, especially with not playing Zoo enough, probably maybe overloading Lou and Trez. But, like, he has a lot of options. I think he's still tinkering. Now that Rodney Magruder is apparently out of his funk and playing well again, like, how he's played the first few years of his NBA career, like, that's big, because he's good. He's Landry Shamet size, but does have the length to play effective defense against bigger guys. Mo Harkless has been really good. Jamichael Green's cooled off a bit. He was really hot to start the season. He's had some not so great games lately, but I mean, there's a lot of options, and, like, I'm just not worried about it. They're 7-5. It's not great. Records do matter. There are some trouble spots, like we've said, but overall, like, Kawhi's played really well for the most part. PG looked great. And yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers are still on track to be really good. Quickly, Terrence Mann got his first NBA start today, had 5 points, couple rebounds, 4 assists, has a few bad turnovers, but overall, for like a second round rookie playing in his first NBA start, I thought he acquitted himself, you know, fairly well.
Yeah, but we can't qualify our evaluation of Terrence Mann based on him being a second round rookie anymore. Now he's just an NBA player. He's a guy on the team. Like, yeah, I agree he's a great get, but what I saw from him tonight was definitely someone who's figuring it out offensively. Uh-huh. You know, there was a play, I think, in the first quarter where he drove middle and just immediately had the ball confiscated.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, yeah, those are things that you tried in preseason and got layups on that in the NBA, there's like 5 hands that are hungry to take it away. So, like, even against the Pelicans, who are arguably the worst team in the NBA or definitely, like, bottom tier,
yeah,
there's stuff you can't get away with. And he'll figure that out. And another thing I saw in the third quarter, I think, where he drove the ball, got into the paint, and gave kind of like a head fake and then a turnaround that he missed. And it was a very SGA-looking play.
Yep.
And I don't know how much the two players have in common, like in their dribble drive game, but they're definitely learning from the same people. And like Sam Cassell is really good at developing guards. And I think Natalie Nicasi should also get some credit here too. Yeah,
definitely.
But the Clippers coaching staff does a really good job developing guards. So I'm if he turns out to be half the player and twice the man that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, then we have a lot to be excited about.
Yeah, I know. And one last thing before we transition a little bit to wrap up too. I think, like, this is a very hot take. I think Derek Walton should get a chance at minutes this season. Like, I like Terrence Mann, but as you just said, like, he's learning the NBA offensively, especially a new position at point guard. Jerome Robinson, shockingly, has played pretty good defense, but his offense is just not there right now. It could be my Michigan bias showing. I trust Derek Walton Jr. to run the Clippers offense more than I do Terrence Mann or Jerome Robinson right now. And, like, yeah, I mean, he doesn't have the upside of either of them. He's like 25. He's clearly like a fringe NBA player, but he's like an actual point guard with actual point guard skills and reps. And, you know, at some point, like, if Jerome keeps not shooting and not, and just hot potatoing the basketball, and Terrence Mann can't dribble and penetrate against, you know, NBA level defenses, Walton should legitimately get a chance, you know, to play. Like, I mean, I don't know if he'll actually do anything better. He very well might not, but, like, it was kind of rough watching Mann and Robinson running the offense, because it really wasn't running the offense. It was giving the ball to Lou Williams and Paul George, neither of whom are actual point guards and don't really get the offense into sets. Like, Lou is a great playmaker, but he's not a guy who's going to run, like, an offense all the time. So, yeah, my hot take is that I think Doc should try Derek Walton at some point in the near future. If Jerome and Terrence Mann aren't playing up to snuff. But
I think that makes sense, just because they're playing a lot of these games like they don't really matter that much. You know, just the idea of starting Terrence Mann to begin with shows a certain amount of, you know,
blase.
Disregard for the outcome of the game, as, you know, as opposed to, like, establishing process or, like, building, you know, some sort of roster cohesiveness and figuring out what people on the roster can do. So, yeah, I mean, they should basically be playing everybody, especially if they're giving, like, Rodney Magruder as much run as they're giving him. Terrence Mann, Jerome Robinson, all these guys should be getting some play. Patrick Patterson, all these guys should be getting some play. And they have, you know, they have a guy. They have a guy who can do that stuff. So, yeah, I'd like to see it too.
Yeah. But speaking of guy who would be getting minutes, who should be getting minutes on this Clippers team, who we mourn forever for not getting minutes on this Clippers team anymore, the Ty Wallace tracker.
Ty Wallace.
The weekly Ty Wallace tracker. Ty Wallace played 17 minutes today for the Hawks. He had a classic Ty Wallace line, 0 for 5 from the field, 0 for 2 from 3, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, plus 5, highest plus minus on the Hawks in a 14-point loss.
Were they the last 17 minutes of a blowout?
No. They lost by 16, but no, he played in the first and I think he gets a few minutes in the first and second quarters when Trey sits, and then he played like a little in the third and early fourth when it wasn't a blowout yet. But like at least half those minutes were blowout minutes. But yeah.
Well, on Saturday night he's coming to LA. And we're going to hang out. I'm going to be going to the Clipper game. I'll be probably sitting in the 300 section. But we'll have that connection. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. And the Hawks are going to be fun. Like, I mean, that's a game the Clippers should win because the Hawks are not good. But Trae Young might be the most fun player in the NBA right now. Like, he's certainly like top five. Like, it's incredible. He's nutmegging a player every single game. And like, he's going to try to do that to somebody on the Clippers, and Pat Beverly is going to lose his shit.
Yeah.
It's going to be incredible. And then Jabari Parker is going to, like, throw down with Jamichael Green or something in a battle of, like, 6'8", 260-pound power forwards, and we'll all be better off for it.
Jabari Parker playing the best basketball of his career right now.
Looking legitimately good. Honestly, Jabari Parker looking good is more shocking to me than Andrew Wiggins looking good.
I agree, and I'm excited for Andrew Wiggins. I might end up writing a column about that at some point, but we'll see. In the meantime, if you don't subscribe to Unstattable, you should. This is my weekly Clippers newsletter. It's free, and it's gonna have great reported insights and other insights, non-reported.
Speculative
about the Clippers every week this year. It's funny. There's pictures in it, and it's a good way for you to track every win and loss that happens in the Clippers this season.
Yeah, and I mean, you do want to catch up on the wins because, after all, same old Clippers only runs after losses. So this time, you got a double amount of content, two losses. Hopefully we don't run again for a little while, you know? But yeah, I mean, I would say the Clippers, as long as they're load managing and still getting the roster together, they're going to keep losing some games. So we'll be around. But yeah, I mean, I think we had a good one. We solved Dion Waiters' edible incident. We disrespected JJ Redick. And yeah, you'll catch us around next time on same old Clippers.
All right, man. If the Clippers never lose again, it's been really fun.
Yeah, it's been great.
Okay, see you, dude.
All right, go. 10, 5, 4, 3. That's tomorrow, and that is a... 10, 5, 4, 3.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
I can't do it.
I mean, how silly is that?
We'll do it live.
Practice?
No. We'll do it live.
Practice?
Do it live. I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
I mean, how silly is that?